Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. This is your host, Stone Payton, and in the studio with me this morning is my good friend and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Stone. How was your weekend? You recovered?
I am recovered, but we had a fantastic time last week putting another studio in North Carolina and getting a chance to visit with the North Carolina Technology Association. We did a pile of interviews, caught up with some old friends, made some new ones. How about you? You rested up?
Yeah, that was a great trip. What was that, 4 days in Wake Forest, and get to spend time with the folks at NCIDA. It was great.
So we're looking for great things from that studio and from a continued relationship with the NCIDA, I think is how
that's what they like to be called there.
But this is going to be a fantastic show this morning. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with the manager of new business development with the Aspire Group, Alan Pandiani. And we're going to talk with Vice President of Marketing for Sprout Organic Foods, Mr. Jeff Stella. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Chief Profit Generator and CEO, the Grand Poobah of YPN Companies. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Jim Browning. How you doing, man?
I'm doing fine. Thank you.
I like the title, Chief Profit Generator.
Yeah, you like that.
I think everybody should have one, every company.
A friend of mine in Australia suggested that.
So now, what are you guys doing for folks at YPN?
We do a lot of business consulting, coaching, training, mentoring, a lot of different things. Plus, we represent a lot of brands as well. We kind of like a manufacturer's rep, let's call it.
A manufacturer's rep in which way?
Where we would be the sales agent with reps that I have all over the country that would go into, in a lot of cases, supermarkets and represent the brands that they have to sell.
Now, how did you find yourself in a career like that? What's the backstory?
The bad story. I don't know if it's a bad story.
It's a backstory. He said
back. Well, I meant to say backstory anyway. It could have been a Freudian slip.
Yeah, it could have been, but I don't think it was. The backstory was 30 years plus with Coca-Cola Company and a lot of different roles and met a lot of people, built a lot of relationships. So. The good news is there's companies out there that like to capitalize on that.
So now, is that why most of your work's in the supermarkets?
Most of it is, yes. But we've branched recently into some other things. We'll see how well we do there.
And what areas now are you working in?
Well, we've done a lot of things with coaching and mentoring small business owners through the actually the Regis organization. They mm-hmm. have office suites around the country, and we work with their members.
And then, how do you help the members?
Well, number one, getting their social profile out there, getting their brand out there. Sorry, that's the 30 years of Coke. Got to worry about the brand.
Got to protect the brand at all costs, right?
Yeah, but it's interesting because most small entrepreneurs forget that. Mm-hmm. They're worried about the day to day getting stuff done, and they forget that the brand's the most important thing. And it could for them, it's really them. It's the individual.
Well, the beauty of branding is even if you think you're not doing it, you're doing it. So it's going to happen either way. So
that's
you might
correct.
As well manage it a little. Now, how'd you hook up with Regis? How'd that come about?
Well, we were working with several of the different GMs, and finally we took it to task and went after it and said, let's see if we can help them, which in turn will help us because mm-hmm. we have some great advantage in talking to their tenants and opportunities there, but more importantly, helping their tenants.
Now, how do you define small in a small business? Is that a solopreneur or is it a 100-person firm?
It could be anything below that 100 probably is an entrepreneur or small business. Now I say that, and I've also done a lot of coaching for Fortune 400 companies as well. So, we're a wide range.
Well, and we should mention for those listeners who don't know, most of our studios operate out of Regis Executive Suite Centers. It's a marvelous space. They're Class A space. You've got the reception area. And it's perfect for our studios. And then whenever we need a conference room or something like that. So it's turned out real well for us. Now, I understand that you're a real advocate of utilizing LinkedIn.
Yeah, very much so. When I left Coca-Cola in 2005, I started using the social media platform LinkedIn. And at that time, they only had, 6 million members. Today, they have over 310 million members. So it's changed quite a bit. And what I do since then is I've always supported a job seeker, and I help job seekers throughout Atlanta and really throughout the U.S. as I've traveled. But go to the local churches and ministries and give away free LinkedIn training.
So what's the first thing you do when you help somebody, you know, kind of get their act together on LinkedIn?
Well, I started it earlier, get their brand right. Them as an individual, they are their brand as they go out job seeking. So they have to figure out how to present that brand properly.
And then how do they kind of use LinkedIn as a pull where people are seeking them out and, you know, they're found in the way they want to be found?
Well, number one is get the correct information. Get your history there. It's not a resume, so you can put a lot more detail there. Mm-hmm. Resumes typically are one or two pages, where LinkedIn, you know, depending on the individual and their years of experience, could go very deep and very wide. And the search criteria makes it easy for that to be for that individual to be found.
Now, for yourself, don't you think that it's a little bit of an advantage having a bunch of years at Coca-Cola? So then you have like instant credibility as opposed to some person that maybe just graduated college and then they put their name out there with, you know, their LinkedIn profile is maybe not as robust as yours?
Well, it's not as robust, but it most likely has some history there. And more importantly, is they get some recommendations from...
Is that a strategy that you recommend?
Absolutely. So we work with a lot of right out of college, interesting through the job seekers. We do a lot of work with moms that have been stay at home.
So then maybe they worked a little bit, then they were home with their kids, and now they're getting back at.
Right.
So is that that's a different strategy than I guess somebody that just recently graduated?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I said moms. There's surprisingly, or not surprisingly, a lot of dads as well.
Yeah, both Stone and I were stay at home dads.
Yeah.
So how discerning should I be in accepting connections?
Good question. I wouldn't worry about it at all, especially when you're starting out. With LinkedIn and with most of the other social media, they have a nice remove button. So that if you don't like the person, you know, you remove them. And what I always teach people is you know, it's not that, you know, when I remove you, that you get a message back that says Jim Browning doesn't love you anymore. Good news is that doesn't happen.
So now, is there ways for somebody to abuse being LinkedIn with me?
They can. Spamming can happen everywhere. LinkedIn, security-wise, has done a great job of protecting the individual. And the thing that I always remind people is think about who created it originally. It's a gentleman by the name of Reid Hoffman. His claim to fame was he created PayPal and then sold it. So my guess is it's got some security.
So now how would you manage this? You're on LinkedIn, somebody, you know, you link in with, and you, like you said, you cast a wide net. So you're not, you know, personal friends with every single person. And this person goes, can you recommend me? What's your elegant response to that?
Well, my elegant response is there's two ways to endorse or recommend people. One is it on the top, it pops up with an endorsement where it's just arbitrary. You have no idea who's going to be on that screen, and you can give them endorsements. You're not saying that you approve of what they do or how they operate. You're just endorsing that they're an individual that you've connected with. The recommendation is that true written form, where you actually type out a message or words that you would say, you know, for that person. And that I hold dear, and I don't give away very many recommendations. I have to experience your work or do things with you. You know, as an example, I could give recommendations of the radio show, but I couldn't give recommendations of somebody that attends a training session that I have.
So now, but how do you respond back to that person who says, will you recommend me?
I just say those words is, I have not experienced your work. I do not know who you are, other than we are connected on LinkedIn, and I would glad to get to know you.
What if they say, hey, I see you're connected with, you know, the CEO of Coca-Cola. Can you connect me?
Well, in LinkedIn, they have something called the introduction. So, yes, I can. Assuming that individual, the CEO of Coca-Cola, is accepting introductions. And I always forward the introduction on with the caveat is don't know the person, assuming I don't know, don't know this individual personally, so I can't speak to their character, but they are asking for an introduction, and I am doing that for them.
Mm-hmm. Now, you work with job seekers, and sometimes you help them with LinkedIn training for a very attractive fee of nothing. So how, why, what's the thinking on that?
Well, it's interesting because people have said why, and I've been doing it since 2005, and frankly, it's been one or two or even three times a month since wow. then. And it's pretty easy to find out the schedule. It's, they say branding is important, jimbrowningtraining.com. I didn't get creative there, but it's easy. But the reason I do it is that these individuals need help. But more importantly is they have a very long memory when you help them and when you ultimately connect with them and then assist them in finding a job, they remember that longer than they remember most things. So when you ask them for help down the road, they provide it and they give you those introductions you need.
So how does the balance of your sales and marketing thing work? Are you out like kicking up opportunities or is most of your sales and marketing, is it inbound because of all this groundwork that you've laid?
A majority of it is inbound, but I've also, I realize that I can't do it all on my own. So I have a gentleman here in town, his name is Bob Mattson, that does all of our business development. And he does the groundswell, let's call it. And he does it using traditional business development tools. He attends all the networking events. He attends business efforts. But more importantly is, everything of our past, our history, and our reputation brings a lot of people to us.
So now let's talk about this event at Regis. Is it only for Regis people or is it open to anybody?
No, it's open to everybody. And we took on Google Partner, contacted us and said, can you host some events? And we decided instead of one event, we did three. And so on May 25th, this Wednesday at 1:30, three different locations of Regis, Cumberland City View it's called. The Sterling Point location here in Perimeter and then the Town Square in Decatur, a representative of YPN Companies will be hosting that event. And it's free to anybody that wants to attend, and it's pretty simple to join. I mentioned it before, jimbrowningtraining.com. I don't like to confuse people.
So now you go to this event, and it's what does broadcast mean?
Well, broadcast is you've got three leaders of Google that will be broadcasting live, and it is centered around small business. So, the VP of business development, small business, three individuals, and you can get the details and their short bios on the website or on the
your people are going to be there in person?
Yes.
And their people are going to be on video conference?
Yeah, we're going to have our laptops connected in to their video conference.
It's like a Google Hangout?
Kind of, but it's in the partner section. Yeah, they chose to keep this a little separate because, small business is still trying to figure out what Google Hangouts is.
Mm-hmm. And then what's going to happen there at the event that an individual can benefit from?
Well, the most important thing is they get to network with their peers. There's going to be, at Cumberland, some 25 people there, Cumberland location, and then Decatur is a smaller Regis office, so it's, only 15. But at Sterling Point, we're going to have somewhere around 70 people right in that location because they've got a very large facility.
So before we wrap, I want to learn a little bit more about the work at Jim Browning, the training. Tell me how it starts. Is it kind of an initial conversation, consultation? Walk us through the engagement, if you would.
Yeah, it does begin with that conversation of I need help with my LinkedIn profile. I need help with my business. Where is it at? And if it's on the LinkedIn profile, we have several people on retainer that can actually support the individual and can do the work. If it's a sales and marketing effort, recently I concluded a two-year effort with a Fortune 400 company where that was more my time. I had to travel, 40 states to their different sales locations and teach their people how to sell in a customer-centric sort of way. So it varies dramatically, and it all comes from building relationships. I tell people, even in the job search, don't get anyone angry.
That's a great tip. Write that down.
Yeah, I mean it's common sense, but it's remarkable how many people don't follow it. And even in networking, one of my blogs that I continue to repost and repost because it gets so much effort is network the way your grandmother taught you. And they all say, "What do you mean by that?" And it's real simple. Your grandmother always taught you to say please and thank you. Do that same thing in social media and you will be successful.
That stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is most of your clients here in town or are they all over the country, the world?
Good news is majority of it is U.S., but I have a partner in Scotland and I have a partner in Australia that we can basically go anywhere.
Sounds like very rewarding work.
It's quite different than what I was doing at Coca-Cola. Similar but different, you know, supporting and helping my clients and customers. But now it's my business, so it's different.
Where can our listeners go to learn more, both about your training work and about this upcoming event with Google?
Well, the main site is ypncompanies.com, and that's spelled with an IES, plural. And then the training or any training that we offer, especially the LinkedIn and social media, is at jimbrowningtraining.com. And we have several that are booked and ready, July with RMC here in Roswell, Mount Perrin in September, and back to Johns Creek at Perimeter Church. So we go where we can get some large crowds and support as many people as possible.
And this Regis event is on one day?
It's on one day, May 21st, this Wednesday at 1:30.
Well, thanks so much for coming by and visiting with us, man. This has been a lot of fun.
I appreciate it. It has been fun for me, too, and hey, continues to be.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. I want to hear what they're doing, too.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have with us Manager New Business Development with the Aspire Group, Mr. Alan Pandiani. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well, Stone. Thanks for asking.
So what did you learn in that last segment?
I learned about the importance of having your LinkedIn profile looking as sharp as possible, and I'm pretty confident in mine. I think my rating on there right now is at an all-star level, so I understand the value of having it, and we utilize it as a company as we're searching for industry leaders in the business of sport.
So why don't you share a little bit about the Aspire Group? What are you guys doing?
Sure. So we are a global sports business consulting firm focused primarily on ticket marketing, ticket sales, and ticket service worldwide. So we operate in the collegiate space in the United States, professional in Canada, professional in the UK, and professional in Australia as well.
Now, do you have an athletic background or what got you interested in this field?
I do. I was a student athlete at Providence College up until the spring of 2010. And a little known fact about the city of Providence is that the Big East Conference was founded in the city of Providence by Dave Gavitt, the initial commissioner of the league. So I had a lot of interaction with the conference itself when I was still at PC. And I found myself one day saying, I love this. I enjoy this so much. Why would I ever want to leave this industry?
Now, Lee, you don't know this, but I was a student athlete as well.
Really?
That is where I fine-tuned my table tennis skills at Pensacola Junior College. Maybe I was a student and an athlete.
Is that one of the sports you help ticket sales?
Not yet, but we're open to it. It is an Olympic sport, so it can be possibly a revenue generator in the future.
So what's all this noise about the fan base changing? The demographics are changing for the people that watch and spend money on sports in general and certainly collegiate sport, right?
Right. Well, one of the things that we see nationwide right now in college especially is when you look at these stadiums and the larger conferences, you know, game day on college football Saturday in the South, what would be one thing you would notice or would be remarkable about the fan base and that the fan base is generally growing older because as we look at millennials and as they enter into their sort of prime purchasing years, millennials have a very short attention span and are looking for something extremely different out of their game day experience than, say, somebody that attended a college in the 70s, 80s, even in the 90s.
So now how do you deal with that?
It's really about targeting those millennials, because as we see, 84% of millennials purchase based off of either a recommendation of a friend or a consumer advocacy program or consumer reports website. So what we really try to do is avoid any type of blanket marketing where sometimes just one promotional offer will go out to an entire fan base. What we want to do is we want to segment and target our fan base as much as possible, because something that may be appetizing to me as a 26-year-old Providence College Friar basketball fan is going to be completely different from a 55-year-old Providence College basketball fan. So it's about being as detailed as possible and putting as much thought into the offering as possible, because that is what will ultimately lead to your fans activating on those offers.
Now, are you only doing kind of the big sports, or are you doing the other sports as well?
Right. We work with all of them. We have vast and varied sizes of operations across the United States. Our largest right now at Arizona State University, where we have 36 full-time employees on campus.
Wow.
And we sell women's softball, baseball, women's basketball. Every sport at ASU is ticketed. But then you talk about a smaller school or schools where Olympic sports are free to attend, we're primarily focusing on only football or basketball.
Now, what about alternative revenue streams? Like Stone has a friend whose kid plays softball at a college, and they do pay-per-view rights for that. Are you involved in that in any way?
That's a great question. What we're looking at now is schools are always trying to find non-game day revenue. So what we're seeing happen more often than not is sometimes we're being asked to book spaces within the athletic facilities, because they have these beautiful club lounges or open areas that are historically only used 8 or 10 times a year. So what we look at doing is, gosh, you know, this would be a great place to have a wedding or a birthday party or a bar mitzvah, really anything.
So your job is now event sales at these venues in some cases?
In some cases, we're getting there.
Are you aiming at that?
We'll see if something's coming down the line here in the next couple months. But if you look at like the New York Yankees and the new Yankee Stadium, mm-hmm. they have a sales staff that's 100% dedicated to the sales of New York Yankee tickets, and then a sales staff that's 100% dedicated to non-game day revenue events. So concerts, weddings, everything I was just discussing. But it's making the most and maximizing your yield out of your venue. And like I said, some of these club lounges are so ornate and beautiful. It's a waste that they're not being used on a more frequent basis.
You got to capitalize on the resources that are available to you. It was like a year and a half ago, I did a talk down at the Tech Stadium, and I don't remember the name of the space, but it was gorgeous. And behind me, which might be why some people weren't paying as much attention to me, I'm sure it wasn't mm-hmm. the talk, is just a beautiful view of the field. And I'm sure that's true in so many facilities, right?
Well, we're actually partnering with Georgia Tech, and we've been there for 5 years.
So you probably know the space I'm talking about.
I do.
It's gorgeous.
It's in the suite level at Bobby Dodd Stadium.
Yeah.
And you see now GT, they have a beautiful space in their new basketball arena, McCamish Pavilion, where they have started doing this. They have some smaller gatherings, smaller birthdays, and we're hopeful that as our client partner in the future, they'll look to having things like a prom or a wedding, that type of.
Because that's not even on the radar, right? Right now, though the space is available, you just don't think to do it in that environment. Is that the challenge?
You know, I think that's sort of, we see this shifting paradigm where you see historically colleges, universities were staffed with people that had some sort of connection with the school in the past. And now you see University of Michigan, they hired the CEO of Domino's to come in and run the school like a business. Because when you have a brand that has that much following and that much equity in the United States, it needs to be treated just as a Coca-Cola or a Newell Rubbermaid or one of these iconic brands in the United States. And there's so much – the purchasing power of the fan base is such that you need to be leveraging what you have with your – partners that are signed on, whether it's for advertising or broadcast rights as well.
But isn't it so that if you're having a prom, you might have no affiliation with the school at all? You just need a good quality event space.
Right. And that's the great thing about the non-game day revenue is if somebody's going to come out to your game, they have to have an affinity either for
your
school
team or the other team.
Right. Just football or basketball right. in general. But when it comes to a wedding, it's, well, what's the bride and what are the exactly. bride and her mother looking for? They're looking for some place that's going to be nice and hold the number of people that they want, be able to get the right type of catering, et cetera, et cetera.
So the branding guy was nodding his head the whole time you were talking about the changing demographics of the people that are running these operations. I think that's fantastic. Talk to me a little bit, if you will, about the role of technology, if any. Is it evolving in marketing in this specific arena?
Sure, Stone. My response to that would be yes, undoubtedly yes. We are probably pitched by 10 to 15 different technology vendors on a weekly basis looking to use our standing partnerships with our schools across the United States to sort of get their product in the door.
Right.
And that's sort of one of the added values we offer to our client partners is we're vetting out all of these technology companies and finding which ones provide maximum results for the organization. So, for example, one vendor we use here in Atlanta, Gigabark, they do an unbelievable job at text-to-win programs, which is essentially a data capture program. So we worked with an event that was down at the Georgia Dome earlier this year where we didn't really know who our fans were that were coming in and sitting in the Georgia Dome because it was far and away a large group sale, and typically you're only getting the data back on the group leader that's purchasing the 40 or 50 ticket block.
Right.
But when you use a company like Gigabark, you're then saying, okay, you know, vote, text whatever to vote for dancer A, B, or C for who you think won the dance contest. And what we're actually doing when that's going on is identifying who the people are that are in those seats, getting their name, getting their cell phone number, getting their email address, because they have to give us all of those data points before they're able to vote.
And then so they're voting on just some, like one of those silly things that happened in the dead time?
Yeah, it can be for that, or it can be for who did you think was the impact player of the game. But that's just one example of how specialized the technology is getting.
But the more you're doing that, the more your data you're collecting, because different people resonate with different activities.
Exactly. And that's what we see is such a critical piece of a successful partnership for us, is having an extremely rich database.
And then so then you share that with the venue?
Right. Well, we'll share it with our client partner. We'll use it for ourselves. The biggest thing is with the can spam laws and how stringent it's become these days, we need people opted in before
right.
we
can do
communicate
anything. Sure.
with them. So what this is doing is it's a win-win-win for everybody, because the client the fan that's in the venue, they're going to be getting more information or voting or doing something that's of benefit to them. We're going to be getting a richer database that we're in turn able to call, capture, communicate, and close on. And then the client partner or the venue is going to be getting back a detailed report where they now know and have a flashlight shown on who the people are that are actually coming into their venue and experiencing these events, because they can then go back to their sponsors or media rights people and provide that back to companies that they're trying to partner with for sponsorship.
Now, do you find yourself working with alumni associations or with other sources of revenue to finance new construction or to help the rich people give money to build a new stadium or something?
Yeah, the arms race, as we would call it in quotation marks, in college sports is never ending. You look at the larger BCS football schools and the resources that they have, it's unbelievable. When I go into colleges and universities across the United States all the time, and to see the investment that's being made in these facilities, in these walk of fames, in these locker rooms, if you're not competing or keeping up with whoever's in the lead, you're losing out on recruiting, you're losing out on brand perception, and it can be extremely damaging to your recruiting abilities as a program. Now, when I say that, another huge piece of that is the venue. So you look at Baylor will be opening a brand new stadium this year, which I think will probably be the new standard that'll be set for college football when you look at
And you all know of Baylor the, is just a powerhouse football.
Oh, I know, right?
Well, they, so, of course, they'd have the best stadium in the country. That would make perfect sense.
Right. But oftentimes it's, how the heck are we going to finance this? How are we going to put it? How are we going to get together $250 million to overhaul this stadium or build a brand new stadium? And there's so many different financing options out there these days. It's really what's going to work best for your school or your program. So are you going to TIF it? So a TIF is when you would be, taking a percentage of a sales tax in a certain geographic area. So, when they built a major league stadium out in Colorado back in the early 90s, what they did was they took a tenth of a percent on the sales tax for five counties that were surrounding Denver, and they paid off the entire cost of the stadium within 10 years. But then you look at other schools where they're using what we call – it's technically what the pros would use as a personal seat license campaign, a PSL campaign. What they then use, because sort of people don't want to hear that when they're donating these large amounts of money. So what we use is a construction gift campaign, which is really what it is.
Right.
You know, how badly do you want to see your football program become elevated in the eyes of the general public across the United States? Because higher visibility venues or nicer venues typically get more coverage on the media outlets.
Well, I know we're going to see you at Jim's Google event, but in the meantime, what's the best way for our listeners to reach out and learn more? And particularly, you know, folks that are involved with these collegiate programs, they need to sit down with you guys and at least have a conversation, I would think. What's the best way for them to reach out?
Sure. The best way would be at our website. It's www.theaspiregroupinc.com.
And then your client is the college or the stadium? Who's your client?
Again, it's tough to say because it differs based on the country. But in the United States, it's the university or college athletic department itself.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming to hang with us, man.
My pleasure, Stone. Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. We got one more guy we're going to visit with for a few minutes.
I'll stay.
All right. Next up on the High Velocity Radio Show, we have with us VP of Marketing for Sprout Organic Foods. How's that for a shift in topic?
Yeah. You'll see. They all tie together.
We're going to bring it all together with this guy. It's the interview we've been waiting for. Please join us in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Jeff Stella. How you doing, man?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Well, you're very patient. You know, you've been hanging out for a good half hour listening to this gentleman talk, but I'd like to think that you picked up an idea or two.
Absolutely. I'm learning a lot.
And you're going to take that kegger picture off of your LinkedIn profile. Check that off.
I was doing it while we were talking, yes.
All right. So tell us about this outfit, Sprout Organic Foods.
Well, we're a small local company, started out as an organic baby food company, and it just have grown and evolved over time. We now make organic food for the entire family. We're distributed all across the country.
You need to get into supermarkets? I know, guy. You can connect with me on LinkedIn, and I can connect you with him.
It's amazing how you can reach people, huh? Fortunately, we have really good distribution. Just about any store you'd go into across the country, regardless of channel, whether it's supermarkets or natural channel, we have some amount of distribution in. So a small business, but growing rapidly over the 5 or so years that we've been around. So it's been really fun to be part of.
Now, can you share a little bit for the person who has an idea that they're trying to get into a supermarket? What was the evolution of from idea to that first supermarket that said, you know what, we'll let you have some shelf space?
Sure. Well, I think we've kind of heard it from the two other guests here today. Relationships certainly is part of it, and knowing your consumer or targeting your consumer appropriately. So for us, it was, as you said, it was coming up with that idea, having an idea that was different than anyone else in the marketplace. And, you know, where necessary, begging and pleading to get that appointment with that buyer to sit across the desk from them and show them what we were all about, and convince them that we could help them grow their business, by being a part of their space that they have in their store.
But how was it, like, you have first, it's the idea for the product. What was the very first product?
Yeah, so it really, you know, the idea started, our two co-founders were at a party, and one of the members, guests of the party had a baby there, and the mom couldn't get the baby to eat. And one of our co-founders is a professional chef, And so he felt it was important that he came to the rescue, literally got up and whipped up something in the kitchen.
Like went to the kitchen.
Not even his kitchen. Made some baby food and gave it to the mom.
Is it that easy to make baby food?
Well, you know, you'd be surprised. The kind of food that we make, yes. We mm-hmm. pride ourselves on it being, it's real food. It's as pure as it can be. Mm-hmm. So yes, it's just like the kind of food that you would make in your own home kitchen.
Okay, so he whipped something up. Do you remember?
He whipped something up. Well, I wasn't there personally, but he whipped it up, gave it to this, to the mom, and you know, the company lore is that the baby gobbled it all up, and the two guys sat across from each other and said, you know, hey, I think we have an idea here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if with your skills as a chef, you know, our other co-founder, his business skills. And that was really where the idea was generated. From there, it went to creating recipes, designing packaging, and then getting those appointments with all of the retailers across the country to say, we have something different and better than everybody
else. But how early in the process are you going to a store and saying, hey, is this something you put on your shelves?
Well, we have an existing product line now. So
now, to get an incremental one more isn't as difficult as the first one in there.
No doubt. Although, you know, you're always seeking to get more of your line into a retailer.
Right.
So you're certainly leveraging your business performance in that retailer to date. And again, your relationship with the buyers that you have in those particular environments to either expand your distribution, or if it's a new retailer for you, it's a harder sell. You're taking a different approach than you would. But the bottom line is it's all about helping them grow their business and showing how what you have to offer can help them accomplish that.
Now, how do they determine if you're being successful or not? Like, they give you shelf space for three bottles of your stuff, and then they're counting them at the end of the month, yeah, and they're saying that's enough or that's not enough?
Most retailers use the same measures. The bottom line, it comes down to how productively you are using their physical space. Velocity is a common term that's used, or dollar velocity specifically.
And what does that mean?
Well, if it would be sales per linear inch or per linear foot of their store.
Really? Linear inch?
They will measure it down to that detail. Wow. Their space is sacred. That's why it's so challenging to, you know, to break in and get your products on the shelf. But they hold everyone to the same standard. So that's the good news, is that you at least know what you're going up against when you go into it. And there are all kinds of syndicated data sources out there that track performance. So everyone can kind of see how you're doing. You can measure yourself on a weekly, a monthly basis. How are we performing against our competition, against the people that we're fighting for that shelf space?
I don't know why you look so surprised. We measure impact right here on the High Velocity Radio Show. By the linear second. Kevin's got a meter back there. You're doing really well for now.
I appreciate it.
So you're another one of these 5-10 year overnight success stories, but now you're growing fast. So how do you manage rapid growth without falling into some of those pitfalls? And what are some of those pitfalls?
Yeah, well, it's challenging. I think some of the pitfalls are obvious. For us, the biggest one is not overextending ourselves. You kind of get this emotional high from having success and seeing the growth, and seeing the revenue come in, and seeing the wins at retailers, that opportunities start to pop up for you. And if you don't have a consistent strategy or well-defined strategy, and if you aren't all aligned to that, and if you're not prioritizing your workload against that, it's easy to chase something that isn't right in the path of the wheelhouse of what you're trying to do. So I think that's the biggest, is ensuring that we don't just chase after something and that we don't build a house of cards, that we don't get overextended, either financially or just with our limited human resources. We're not having people work on things that aren't going to drive the business forward or deliver against the agreed upon strategy. So overextending is without a doubt the biggest challenge. And for us, the way that we mitigate that is through prioritization. We sit down regularly as a management team and talk about, what do we need to accomplish this month? How are we using the resources that we have? We literally will rank projects 1 through whatever that number may be for that particular month. And we make sure that not only are we ourselves as the management team, but our team members as well, are we really focused on those and spending our time on a regular basis on that?
So you're checking that every month?
We do. We meet as a management team every month. We actually have every Monday this afternoon, we'll have an all-company meeting as well. We're small. We only have 15 persons, 15 employees, but our CEO does a great job of including everyone. So every Monday we talk as a group, and it's a higher level conversation or more casual conversation weekly. The management team meeting on a monthly basis is very detailed and sometimes can be heated as well.
Because people are being held accountable.
Well, without a doubt. The good news is everyone's very passionate about what we do. It's not just about, the business per se, but most everyone that works at the company is a parent of young children. I have a 3.5-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old daughter, and I feed them the food that we make. And
Kid outgrows it, then they kick you out of the company.
Right. Well, no, again, that's the good news for us.
Another person with a young kid.
Part of our business strategy is we've aged up our product line. As I said, we started as a baby food company, but we evolved into toddlers and then into kids, and now we have products basically from preschoolers to seniors, so that we can capture them young and stay with that family throughout their life.
What about pets? You're moving into pets?
We get a lot of requests for that. We get a lot of social media contacts from people that say that they use our baby food.
That's a shiny object right now?
Well, it's not too shiny. It's a common object, but it's that would be an example of something that is not in our current strategy. And so, no, we're not currently spending any time.
But you have to have the discipline to say no. That's right. Part of it, right?
No question.
And that's a branding tip too, right, Jim?
Absolutely.
You got to say no.
So I'm sure there are some benchmarks that are unique to your arena and even to your specific company, but are there some more universal benchmarks that you might share with our listeners that might help us all as our companies start to grow that we ought to keep our eyes on?
Sure. Well, you mentioned some there are some universal ones. Those might be a little more obvious. Net revenue certainly is something that we track as a company that is focused on growing quickly. Our gross revenue minus all the things, all the discounts that the accounting rules say that we have to throw out before we can really claim, hey, this is how much we actually sold. So we use net revenue a lot. Another one, and we talked about a little bit in regards to supermarkets or just retailers in their space, but that is the number of stores that we're in. We'll call it the number of doors that we may be in.
Right.
And we measure that regularly. Are we getting into new doors? Are we getting into new stores? We set those kinds of measures for ourselves as well, especially given a company that's focused on growth. That will be a driver of our growth, is getting into more and more retailers and more doors as well. So two of the primary ones for us, for our company at this stage, are really our net revenue side of things and the number of stores we're in. Profit is always a measure, that kind of goes without saying. But if you're delivering the net revenue side of things and you're expanding your business, we have enough discipline as a company to make sure our cost structure is in line, that the profit follows as well.
So going back to this sales and marketing thing, let's say you guys identify 5 chains or even 5 specialty stores you want to go after. How do you even get in front of these folks? Because aren't they just hammered by people selling not just, your category, but just all kind of stuff? It's got to be tough just to get 10 minutes with those folks,
yeah,
right?
It is. Well, and again, it goes back to the things we heard from your 2 other guests, that these guys have been successful, and they clearly understand it as well. Relationships, and networking. LinkedIn certainly is a tool that our sales team uses as well.
So how would you use LinkedIn?
Well, mostly through a networking base, finding people who may know people that work at that particular retailer.
So not the consumer. You're talking about in a B2B manner.
For us as a business, we certainly use social media on the consumer side of things.
Right. Just have conversation with customers, passionate.
Exactly.
Raving fans. Everybody
no
needs
doubt.
Them.
But from a LinkedIn standpoint, it's really a B2B tool for us.
So now you're going to the grocer or the person in charge of buying?
Yes, we could directly do that. In other cases, it may be brokers, other sales teams or sales groups that are out there that have relationships that either, we can partner with and they can provide us access. Jim Browning talked a lot about how he runs his business and how he'll, help people out for that great fee of zero that he talked about. And it pays back. Well, same thing for us through networking. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And we have found that we can get access to places just by using LinkedIn to network and help people with information or access on our side, and they eventually will do the same for us.
Now, what about some of the, you're in organic, so that has kind of some cult following. There's some, real influencers. Are you doing anything with them?
Well, we do that on the consumer side.
Consumer
absolutely,
side.
Yeah. All of our social media, Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest. We do some blog influencer campaigns that are very much focused on that, where we are finding those voices that are the loudest or the leading voices.
Right, the ones that have a multiplier effect.
Absolutely. And we're seeding them with our proposition, what we're all about, what we stand for.
Seeding, that was good. Sprout seeding.
Thank you.
It wasn't an accident. Was
you, you caught that, didn't you? You're a professional.
So we were talking a little bit before we came on air about us going to trade shows and doing radio stuff. So we've been to several in the last couple of months. Is trade shows something that companies in your arena, do y'all go and show off for the grocers?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's certainly a tool as well. There are two big trade shows throughout the year for the natural and organic channel, Expo West and an Expo East in the spring and the fall. Most all of the biggest retailers, especially in the natural channel, attend those. So it's primarily trade focused, but there is a little bit of a consumer focus as well.
So that must be like a sample fest, right?
It is, absolutely. And it's a great place to, you know, announce new products. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, certainly we try to schedule
Hey, peas.
That's exactly right. Well, as we've expanded our product line and we've aged up, you know, right. So we launched into toddlers, as we launched into kids, and now with our Sprout Rise product line that is designed for the whole family, those shows were a great way to get the word out, not only with the retailers, but just all across the industry. There are publications that attend those kinds of events, and it's a great way to get press as well as to try to generate business through the retail community.
Now, I don't think we mentioned it, but when we were visiting with Pandiani over here, but both of you guys were Pace Setter Award winners. Am I remembering that right?
Yes.
Do you guys know each other through that?
I'm sure we were at the breakfast at the Marriott Marquis together.
So give us a quick profile on that, because I just forgot to mention it. What was that about?
Sure. So the Pacesetter list, it's the list of the 100 fastest growing companies in Atlanta.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Yeah, this year was the first year that we participated or, you know, were nominated for
consideration. So you're one for one. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. You're undefeated.
That's exactly right.
You're going to knock over the microphone with your chest sticking out.
Thank you. I'll move it back a little bit. Yeah, we were honored as well to be recognized. Again, as a small company, 15 people dedicating, you know, every day after day to try to grow to be recognized and rewarded for that was a great, great feeling.
So what's next for you guys, if you're allowed to share? You mentioned kind of moving a little bit higher up.
Is it kale? It's kale, aging right?
Up. You'd be surprised how popular broccolini. That is.
Broccolini.
We haven't done anything with broccolini, but we do have our R&D team in the labs next week, and kale is definitely one of the considerations. So,
heard it here first.
That's right. We're going to be doing a little bit of rebranding and a little bit of restaging of our product line here coming up this summer. We've done some consumer research, tried to find out things like kale. Mm-hmm. What are consumers seeking? What's important to them? And we feel we have identified some things that will truly differentiate us within a very crowded category. And we're very excited here with the next 30 to 60 days to start doing some marketing of that and have our new products start to hit the shelves as well. So we'll look forward to that impact. And then maybe we can climb up the Pacesetter the list.
There you
go.
Next year. It's a new year.
So one word for you to ponder. You don't have to respond to it immediately. I just want you to noodle on it. Bacon.
Organic bacon.
Organic bacon.
That's some unique challenges, but I like what you're thinking.
Well, it has been an absolute delight having you in the studio, man. Keep up the good work.
Thank you. I appreciate the time.
And the website for you guys?
SproutOrganicFoods.com.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our guest this morning, and everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.